showtime.
Thank you for joining another week of your Lakers Nation podcast, brought to you each week, of course, by LakersNation.com. I am Jabari Davis, and I'll be joined once again by Jameson Welch and Jordan Buscarini for this week's discussion. Plenty to get into that has transpired since last episode, including a bit of rookie watching with D'Angelo Russell and some of his contemporaries from atop the draft class. We'll address some of Kobe Bryant's continued struggles, but also discuss ways that the staff could best utilize him at this stage in his career and for the betterment of the current squad. We'll dive into, of course, this week's Lakers Nation roundtable question as it centers around some of the difficult, or I guess a difficult discussion involving Bryant as well. And we'll have to get into a bit of the back and forth, and continue what I've been calling double talk from the coaching staff that I think actually adds to some of the apparent confusion amongst the players. And if we have time, toward the end of the show, perhaps, a few of the Twitter topics out there, from you faithful and appreciated listeners, again, we always appreciate that. But before we get into a bit of the rookie talk, I actually wanted to acknowledge what would have been, if I'm not mistaken, the 99th birthday of Chick Hearn this past November 27th. Last week. For those of us that have kind of grown up over the past 30 or 40 years here in Southern California, we've truly been spoiled, to obviously having listened to guys like Vin Scully and Bob Miller, Ralph Lawler, and of course my favorite old Golden Throat himself, the late great Chick Hearn. It's hard for me to believe that it's been 13 years since his unfortunate passing, but I can still vividly remember Chick Hearn's voice as, basically the soundtrack to my basketball life, if you will. We won't spend a great deal of time on it, but do either of you have a favorite Chick memory, a particular call, or a Chickism? As a reminder to some of the younger fans, Chick coined many of the basketball terms like slam dunk, dribble drive, alley-oop, amongst a ton of others. Do either of you guys have a favorite moment?
I mean, playing the game in the refrigerator was always a huge thing coming up. You knew that when Chick put the game in the refrigerator, you knew the game was over. You knew good things were coming. But also, just the classic calls. I mean, the Magic hook shot in Boston, that's the classic call. It's probably the most iconic call from Chick. And that's something that, if you're a Laker fan, you can replay that call in your head over and over again anytime. And, hook shot 12, certain things just don't leave you. So that's pretty much a classic Chick call right there. But there's so many, it's hard to mention. But I'll go with the Magic one from Boston, 87.
Nice. What about you, Jordan?
Well, when you look at Chick Hearn, the one thing that's so important to remember is we know him as the voice of the Lakers, but he could call everything. Okay, I'm a very big play-by-play guy, and that's the one thing that stands out to me about Chick Hearn. He could do everything. He was the host of a TV show called Bowling for Dollars. I mean, Chick Hearn was a guy that announced in the 1992 Summer Olympics. He did play-by-play for basketball, by the way, in those 92 Olympics. He was a color commentator for NBC Sports. He did some of the Rose Bowl coverage. He did U.S. Open golf. He did everything that you could possibly think of, and he made it his own. He made you believe that you could see. He painted a picture for the audience in their mind. He could, a blind guy, he could describe everything happening on the basketball court to a blind guy. You could see Magic Johnson get into the paint and knock down a hook shot from 12 feet. Chick Hearn is also the first play-by-play announcer to actually incorporate the length of the shot from the basket, 16, 17, 18-footer, 12-footer, 13-footer. He's such a pioneer for play-by-play announcing. And there's some great play-by-play announcers that I get to talk to on a daily basis, and I'm blessed because I can learn so much from them. If you talk to any of them, they will tell you that Chick Hearn was the pioneer. He elevated sports broadcasting to another dimension. So Chick Hearn, yes, a Laker legend without question, but in broadcasting, he's second to none, and he always will be second to none. There's a reason why he has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. There's a reason why he has a bronze statue outside of Staples Center. There's a reason why we know him as the greatest sportscaster of all time, because his on-air style and his demeanor was second to none.
Absolutely. You can't argue with any of that, and I'll just throw in there, my favorite moment with him is kind of a stalker moment, to be honest with you. For those of you guys, for those listeners out there, again, that were around during his time, shortly after the Lakers moved over to play, playing at Staples, I was going to the games. I was probably like 19, 20 years old. Chick, he would drive home with his wife Marge, right? They would drive home after each game. And I just so happened to be getting on the freeway with him, and, you know, me and a buddy of mine, and, you know, for whatever reason, I looked over to our left, and I was like, man, that's Chick Hearn. So, you know, you don't really think about it in that moment, but after the fact, in retrospect, I look back, and I'm like, man, you know, we probably scared that man because, we're, you know, of course, we're honking, going, hey, Chick, all right. He kind of gives one of those, like, yeah, okay, guys, waves. You know, he's very kind about it, but then he just motors on, you know, and moves on past this. You know, again, afterwards, I look back on it and I say, yeah, you know, probably not the best of ideas to be scaring like an 85-year-old man on the freeway, you know, as he's driving home from a game. But just the same, absolute respect and appreciation for Chick. You know, as I mentioned it earlier, I feel like he was kind of the soundtrack to, you know, many of our basketball lives. And as Jordan, you know, and Jameson mentioned some of the incredible calls, and Jordan mentioned, you know, just how, you know, I guess you could say how well versed he was, and how, how versatile he was. It wasn't just a basketball, you know, it wasn't just a basketball thing. He was just, you know, probably second to none in terms of all around announcing. So, yeah, that's all. Just wanted to take a quick moment to acknowledge, you know, what would have been, if I'm not mistaken, once again, his 99th birthday. But let's go ahead and jump into the talk about the rookies, because I did pull up some of their numbers. You know, much of the talk, of course, was, you know, initially, at least, you know, around here in Los Angeles, you know, was about Russell and, you know, his playing time. And, you know, was he being given enough, you know, of an opportunity to succeed? But let's go ahead and take a look at these quick numbers. I'm looking at Karl Anthony Towns has probably been the most versatile, most all-around player. He's averaging 14.2 points, 9.4 boards. He's shooting right around 52%, you know, 2.2 blocks, and he's playing about 27.8 minutes. Jahlil Okafor is another guy that, you know, has, you know, another rookie that has put up some big numbers, 7.9 rebounds, about a block and a half, you know, shooting under 50% for a big man, but, you know, still right around 46.9. But Jameson, I'm actually going to come to you with this point. You know, Russell's right in there. He's, you know, he's averaging, and of course this has increased as his role has increased, as, you know, more trust has been placed, you know, within him. But he's at 10.2 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2.7 assists. You know, he's shooting 40% from the field, or a little bit over 40% from the field, and 32% from deep. But his minutes are actually right up there and comparable with some of these other guys. He's right around 26.3 minutes. Talk to me about his progress, you know, about how he compares to some of those other guys, even, you know, with an Emmanuel Mudiay and a Kristaps Porzingis, you know, with the starts that they have gotten, and what you'd like to see him work on in order to take the next step.
Well, I think the key, when you think about D'Angelo Russell, you want the ball to be in his hands. He's a lead guard. He's not a guy that's going to play off the ball. He's not a guy that's going to be the second or third ball handler. He's the lead guard. So you need the ball in his hands. You want him to make the decisions. And a big part of why his assists are down is basically because he's not the main one making plays, not the main guy with the control of the ball all the time. And he's the guy that, if you want to see his best, he's going to be the primary ball handler on the court. And if that's not going to happen, then there's going to be issues. But as we've seen, the last 2 weeks have been a lot better than the first 2 weeks of the season from him. Mm-hmm. And that's a key thing. And that's what you want to see. You always want to see progression. And you also want to see him make adjustments. Now, the one thing I see that he can do a little bit more of is get inside the paint. If he can get inside the paint and finish either by floater or at the rim, then he'll be okay. But for the most part, we've seen a little bit of improvement. And that's a good thing. The key is just finding some identity on offense, because when you don't have a strong offensive identity, it's very difficult for a young guard to kind of, you know, have something to rely upon. You're going to run pick and roll so many different times. You have to have certain different quick plays to get you in offense and in rhythm. So it's a little bit different for D'Angelo. His situation is a little bit different than a lot of other rookies. But so far, he's been okay. You know, he's been okay. Not as great as expectations may have been from the jump. At the same time, he's not as bad as all the critics have, you know, claimed that he's been and whatnot. So he's been okay, but I do think he will get better as the season goes on.
You know, and James, I'm actually going to stick with you on this. You know, I'm looking at these other numbers. I've got Moody and I've got, you know, Porzingis. Now, look, Porzingis is actually better than I would have imagined. He looked impressive, obviously, during the draft process. But, you know, that guy's going to be a player, and it's already obvious. He's making an impact on both ends of the court. You know, he's averaging 13.2 points, 9.1 rebounds. He's, you know, almost two blocks a game. He's got the, you know, range from deep. But, you know, the real talk was centered around the comparison with Russell Jalen Moutier. You know, Moutier, he's at 12.3 points. You know, he's got, you know, he's averaging 6.1 assists because, as you mentioned, you know, his role is significantly different than Russell. He's the, you know, he's not just the primary ball handler. He's the guy. He's the, he is the playmaker when it comes to the Denver Nuggets. But, you know, when I look at the numbers, I actually feel that even though Russell hasn't been what he has, you know what we may have anticipated going into it, and even though the numbers aren't quite there yet, I think he's comfortably played himself back into that discussion. Is that fair?
No, it's definitely fair, because also Moutier, for a guy that handles the ball a lot, is averaging more than 4 turnovers a game. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on. But they're in different situations. But, you know, for the most part, I think Moutier has done a good job as well. I mean, his jumper is still really, really shaky at this point of his career, and that will probably get better. But, you know, they're both different type of players. But Russell, they're right there. You can definitely make comparisons of the two. But, like I said, it's really unfair to make a complete comparison, because one guy is the lead guard, probably one of the best players on his team, if not the best, and one guy is, you know, in the mix of a bunch of guards on the team that have to have the ball. So it's a different type of situation. Once D'Angelo's the lead guard, the guy who has the ball in his hands the majority of the time, then we'll get a better comparison, and also the numbers will go up.
All right, that's fair, that's fair. Jordan, you know, we know, and of course, whether fair or not, the comparison talk is always going to be there with these guys. You know, I'm coming to you for this because, you know, we've gone back and forth, you know, about which rookie might have been the right choice. But part of me wonders if there are any warning signs on the behavior that has kind of led to some of the recent news about the off-the-court issues a guy like Okafor has had. It makes me wonder if the organizations, you know, when they were doing all of the, you know, doing their due diligence, if maybe that would, you know, could have factored into the Lakers' decision to not take him. What are your thoughts on that?
It's possible. I mean, I don't think when we talk about off-court problems with Jahlil Okafor, I think it's important to mention right now that those are somewhat minuscule. For the time being, at this particular recording, when we're doing this this podcast, it's a little bit different than what they may become 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, or they may vanish. I don't see any absolute warning signs looking at Jahlil Okafor right now off the court and saying, boy, this guy's a troublemaker, because he's gotten into 2 fights. I don't necessarily know that that's a huge warning sign or not. I'm not going to sit here and condone it. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, he's got a fighter mentality. No, you don't want your 19-year-old kid in this type of stuff, you know, in these types of situations off the court. Yeah, I'm not willing to say that it's along the same lines as like a Michael Beasley. Okay, Michael Beasley, obviously, and I'll use him because he was the second overall pick in the draft. Michael Beasley obviously had some red flags off of the court, and that's one of the reasons why Michael Beasley was not the number one overall pick, and that's one of the reasons why Miami got criticized for selecting him number 2 overall. You knew that there was a possibility of some off-the-court problems derailing or taking him off course in his NBA career, and that's ultimately what I believe happened. I don't know that he had the motor to get up and down, you know, to get up and down the court on a consistent basis and be productive. I don't know that I see that with Jahlil Okafor. So maybe, I guess, I'm taking the back door out of the question, saying it's a little bit premature. I just don't see any positive warning signs right now. Like, okay, this guy is someone that you're going to have problems with.
Well, Jordan, there's been 2 incidents since before Thanksgiving in his rookie year, and one had a gun pulled on him. And these both have come outside of nightclubs. When you're 19, you shouldn't be at a nightclub. That doesn't raise a bit of a red flag.
Somebody else pulled a gun on him. Did he pull the gun?
No, someone else pulled a gun on him in October.
Well,
not
exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, is he necessarily – like, I don't know the situation. I can't sit here and look at the 2 situations and say that Jahlil Okafor was at fault. I did say you don't want your 19-year-old out. You definitely don't want your 19-year-old stud star player who you just use a 3rd pick overall in the draft on in these types of situations. Yet at the same time, I don't know that it's necessarily, like, as far as his off-court history goes, outside of these 2 instances, there's nothing to present a red flag. I mean, you can sit there and do a behavior analysis on him all you want. He hasn't done anything in the past that leads me to believe that he is a troublemaker.
That we know of.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know the situation inside and out of the 2 situations that we're talking about. I don't know if it's a coincidence the 2 situations happened within a 3-4 week span. I don't know the situation well enough to actually sit here and say that this guy, that there's red flags surrounding him, because as far as I know, and as far as I have followed Jahlil Okafor, he's been pretty good off of the court. So I don't know if this is something that's actually a big warning sign yet. I mean, I think it's still too premature in the early situation going right now to say, okay, this is a problem.
I definitely see where you're coming from, and I'm only going to play devil's advocate here because, you know, I spoke out about this on Twitter, and, you know, again, you know, if you guys, you know, if you do that sort of thing, I'm Jabari Davis, NBA. Jameson is at the Jameson. Jordan is at Jordan_DTS. But, you know, I spoke out about this when the first report came out on Twitter because it's not that I'm trying to play morality cop, or I'm not trying to play everybody's dad, you know, like, you know, on Twitter or anything like that. But, you know, the first incident, it's like, okay, hey, you know, that's a red flag, especially when you see how it went down. He was getting held back, and still broke free and really pursued the guy and ended up, you know, knocking him out, or at least reportedly knocking the guy out. Then when you hear about the second incident and it, you know, and the report, and again, you're right, Jordan, you're completely right. We don't know exactly how it went down. My main concern isn't necessarily how it went down, but it's the fact that he's in these situations already. Again, not to play morality police, but, you know, he's a 19-year-old guy that is, you know, you would hope is trying to focus on becoming, you know, as great as he can possibly be on the basketball court. Now, again, we're all under no disillusion that these guys are going to go out and have fun. Look, that's going to happen. You know, like anytime you involve, you know, a great deal of money and opportunity, you know, with anybody, let alone a 19-year-old. You know, that sometimes things are going to take place. But my thing is, again, you know, and feel free to come back at me at this. You just can't have yourself, as Jameson mentioned, in multiple incidents of this nature in situations where you could really end up getting shot or hurt or worse. You know what I mean? Twice before Thanksgiving.
No, and we've seen a situation just last year with Davo Sabolosha that really shifted the entire Eastern Conference playoff. Athletes have got to be smart enough to not put themselves in that situation. I'm just simply saying, I don't know if it's a coincidence that Jahlil Okafor was involved in two situations within a 3 to 4 week span. I don't know if that's a coincidence. I don't know if this guy is actually looking for trouble, if he actually is a troublemaker. All I know is, based off of what we know about Jahlil Okafor, pre-NBA career, he was not a troublemaker off of the court, at least to my knowledge. I'm not aware of anything that stood out that you could say, okay, this is a red flag with this guy. So, right, you know, if this happens again within the next month, if he's involved in another altercation outside of a club, then I could say, okay, the kid's not making wise decisions. We already know he's not making wise decisions, but now let's see if he fixes the situation and make sure he puts himself in a better situation. Right now, I just don't know enough about it to say, yes, it's a red flag on this kid.
Well, I could agree with that. I mean, it could be, you know, could just be random situations, but hopefully he stays safe because, I mean, we see all these accidents and situations with kids, you know, being in the wrong place for a long time, and hopefully he's able to get his stuff straight. But it is not a good situation when one thing happens and a random story comes out less than 12 hours later, something happening last month. So hopefully that he gets control of the situations because, as we know, you can't control yourself when it comes to random people outside. And in this day and age, everyone's looking for their 15 minutes of fame, whether it's to embarrass someone or become famous. So hopefully he's able to, you know, control that side. Plus, you know, nightclubs, we talked about this discussion on an earlier show last year or last season. You know, when you're out in the middle of the night, you know, not a whole lot of good things happen. So we'll see what takes place.
Yeah, we definitely will. This is actually something that I hope the organization gets on top of and makes, you know, like maybe put somebody in his corner, maybe put several someone's in his corner just to make sure, you know, again, that a 19-year-old is, you know, placed in the best possible, given the best possible opportunity to succeed. All right, guys, let's go ahead and transition, you know, because I received a ton of feedback regarding an article that I wrote over the week. You know, obviously it was on Kobe Bryant. Some people took real issue with the fact that I called him a dwindling shell of his former self, you know, within the article. And, you know, what folks need to understand, to be honest with you, is there's a difference between simply acknowledging the reality of his game these days and somehow criticizing his entire legacy and career. Anybody that has ever read anything that I've ever written about Kobe Bryant or listened to any of these shows knows how much reverence I have for him. So that's not even a question. This is not a black mark on his entire career. It's just simply talking about what's taking place right now. Because I actually think this coaching staff can find a way to properly or at least best utilize him at this stage. Jameson, with all of the back and forth about his game and about his play, You know, and we're going to come to the all the retirement talk a bit later. You know, in a bit later in this discussion when we do the roundtable portion. But what are your thoughts on Kobe at this stage? Well, you know, how could he best be utilized, and what changes do actually need to be made?
Well, I mean, it's tough to make adjustments when you don't really have an offensive system to fall back on. If there was a system to fall back on to say, hey, you know what, we're going to take the ball out of your hands, but we're going to put you here, that's different. But right now there's really no system in place, so it's really difficult to say, hey, these are the adjustments we can make. It's not like you run the triangle where you can move them in different parts of the offense. It's really difficult at this point in time. So right now the offense is really either pick and roll or pass one guy and I go ISO and shoot the ball. So it's really tough when you have, you know, very disorganized offense to have a guy that's trying to find and pick a spot to do so at consistently. My biggest thing is this. I've said it from the beginning of the season, I'll keep on saying it. They cannot play him 30 minutes a night at this age. They just cannot. I understand, you know, each game is different, but the longer you play him, the worse it's going to get, because the body is not going to respond well after a certain amount of time, and, you know, at third and fourth quarter. It's not. You're going to have to monitor the minutes, but also you got to figure out a way to – what has been his strong suit this season. When he's played well, in the moments he has played well, what has he done? Whether it's been the facilitator, whether it's been on the block, what has he done well? And focus on that, because the way the offense is, there's really no offensive system in place to, you know, move him around. But if he's done certain things well this season, put him in those positions and go forward from there. My only thing is this, the shooting percentage, if he's still hurt, if there's still an issue with his body, then you know what? Then he's going to have to sit down a little bit, because you can't continue. The 1-for-14 game was embarrassing for a lot of people, for himself, for fans, for teams, and everyone. When the other players in the locker room felt sorry for him because they didn't know how far he fell, that's a bad thing, and that cannot happen. I still believe he may be hurt. Even though he's an older guy, I still believe he's hurt. And if that's the case, then he maybe should not be playing at this time.
Jordan, you know, to Jameson's point, there have actually been moments and stretches where Bryant has been effective, you know, for this team. In my opinion, you know, it's where he's working primarily out of the post as a playmaker rather than looking to assert himself as a scorer. You know, for as much as he struggled, he still manages somehow to draw the attention of the defense, from that position on the floor. And he's had moments where he's able to open things up for like a cutting Clarkson, you know, Randall or Hibbert rolling to the basket, or even finding Russell, you know, spotting up behind the arc. Is that the answer? Because the answer, you know, it's clear that, you know, Coach Scott's not going to sit him down, and I'm not necessarily asking him to do that. I would like the minutes, you know, limited, but if he's going to be on the court, is that the answer in your opinion?
Well, the problem with Kobe Bryant as far as his inefficiency goes, shooting the basketball and trying to get himself involved as a scorer, he's not shooting the long ball well. And the reason why the long ball is coming, I think the easiest shot to get off in the game of basketball is a straightaway jump shot. It's the easiest shot to get away. You can set your feet. You can get it off. And that's why Kobe's taking about 7 3-point shots a game. Yes, 7 3-point shots a game. I believe he's hitting only 19% from downtown, if I remember correctly. So the problem is that the body, the speed, that's kind of gone away from Kobe. And I'm a little bit shocked at Kobe's inability to adjust his game to better suit his current state of skill. I thought that Kobe was a guy that would be able to adjust, and Tim Duncan is a name that always gets brought up because callers on my show continue to compare Tim Duncan to Kobe Bryant. And I guess it's an age thing. I don't know. I don't know how you can compare a power forward to a two-guard, especially a two-guard that's had three consecutive season-ending injuries. But I think in a sense, Tim Duncan has found a way to adjust his game and become effective in other areas. Kobe hasn't been able to do that on the offensive side because the skill set is not what it was 3 years ago. So instead, he's forced to take the easiest shot that he can get off. That's a straightaway shot, feet set, don't have to create off the dribble. He's getting a shot at the three-point line, not necessarily his strong point. Teams are now welcoming him to shoot that shot. When Kobe can find a way to adjust, the game against Detroit stands out to me. Most efficient game we've seen of Kobe all year long. Third over the triple-double. Even in that game, he wasn't very effective scoring the basketball. So, you know, maybe instead of where we're talking about minutes, I think a gauge, I would like to see Kobe take about 10 to 12 shots a game. I think if Kobe gets 10 to 12 shots a game, you mix that between 25 to 30 minutes, I think Kobe can be effective because he's still going to have the basketball in his hands. But it's trying to find a way to adjust your game to fit your physical tools at this point in time. And unfortunately, the easiest shot for him to get off has been from downtown. Very difficult for one of the all-time greatest scorers in league history to pass up what he deems the easiest shot that he can get physically. And that's what we've seen from the three-point line.
All right, so let's go ahead and, you know, and it's a difficult discussion. It's not really difficult in my opinion because I don't think it's going to take place. But this week's roundtable question was actually a good one. And, you know, again, you know, we remind everybody, you know, to check it out each weekend, generally on Saturdays or Sundays. Corey Hansford puts up a great, you know, a great piece. It's, you know, it's a roundtable discussion with all of the different, you know, talented writers from the site, usually Ryan Ward, Trevor Lane. You know, every so often other folks jump in there, but of course Corey's in there as well. This week's question was, should Bryant actually retire, I guess a la Elgin Baylor and some other legends that decided that they needed to hang him up early in what was eventually their last season? My basic, you know, my basic thought on it is, you know, it's not any of our places to, you know, tell that guy to retire, you know, tell that man to retire. You know, we enjoyed all the good, so sometimes you're going to have to enjoy some, you know, or deal with some of the bad at the end of, you know, what has been an illustrious stretch. You know, that said, you know, I think it really does just boil down to not a matter of, you know, like of hoping or wishing or telling him to retire, more of just, again, you know, Jameson, I'm coming to you, just putting him in the best position to succeed. Do either of you guys think, and again, it's open to either of you, that you may see a point where he just says, okay, enough is enough before we get to the final, you know, final bell?
I actually think I do. I think if we see more performances like we did this past Tuesday, I could see him saying, you know what, enough is enough. Because no one wants to go out embarrassed. No one wants to go out being embarrassed and whatnot. I mean, you don't want to have those performances. I don't think it's going to be that bad. I mean, 114 is pretty bad. And, you know, that's something that we don't wish on anyone. But if that continues to happen or performances like that happen, I do believe that eventually Kobe will look himself in the mirror and say, you know what, I've had a good run and this is that. You know, I don't think he wants to go through the embarrassment point. I think it comes a time where you go look yourself in the mirror and be honest with yourself and say, hey, is this really worth it? Am I hurting the team at this point? And hopefully it doesn't come to that, but if these kind of performances do continue, then yeah, I do think it will come a point in the season, probably after the All-Star break, where, you know, enough will be enough and he will call it a career.
I don't see that happening in the middle of the season. The only thing worse than ending your career with a career-ending injury, a la Charles Barkley, is quitting in the middle of the season. And I don't think we're going to get that from Kobe Bryant. Now, we are looking at it from a basketball standpoint. You got to look at it from a financial standpoint. Regardless if Kobe Bryant is shooting 1 of 14 or not, people are still paying to watch this guy play. They're going to pay to watch. Kobe Bryant could be in a wheelchair, and people are going to pay money to go watch him play NBA basketball. So you got to look at it from the basketball standpoint. You know, we always talk about, should the Lakers have given Kobe Bryant a two-year $48 million contract? And you have those on one side of the fence that say, yes, he's earned it. You have those on the other side of the fence that say, no, because of it, the Laker organization is going to suffer for years down the road. Kobe Bryant now owes it to the Lakers to finish out this contract for financial reasons. And I think that's part of the reason why you will see Kobe finish out this season. Again, without Kobe on the Lakers, telling you what, there's not a big-ticket player that the casual fan is going to go watch. You got to think of it from a casual fan standpoint, not the diehard standpoint. Probably not even from the standpoint of the listeners that are tuning into this podcast right now. You have to look at it from the casual fan standpoint. And if you go and you talk to a guy that maybe watches two or three games front to back for an entire season in the NBA, guarantee you Kobe Bryant's the only player he can name on this Los Angeles Laker roster. Guarantee it. And I'll also guarantee that if this guy goes to see 3 to 5 games a year, I'm just throwing out numbers, one of those 5 games that he's going to go attend is one that includes Kobe Bryant. So for financial reasons, I feel that Kobe owes it to the organization, just the way the organization felt they owed Kobe a $24 million contract to give back and make sure that they can reap the benefits of his final season, which is, as we now know it, is a farewell tour.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see him making the decision, but to Jameson's point, you know, like, you know, if we're being fair, I could, you know, like, who knows if his body's going to, you know, allow him to make the decision. You know, the decision might be made for him at a certain point. That said, you know, he mentioned wanting to ride until the wheels fall off, you know, essentially, and, you know, since that's probably going to be exactly what ultimately takes place, I'm going to do my best to just appreciate, you know, what could be the final moments of, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, what has been an illustrious career. You know, before we run out of time, let's go ahead and get some final shots in there.
Well, final shot is this. Watching the game this past Tuesday, you know, Lakers were heavy underdogs. But I believe it's time to, you know, a lot of people are knocking down the Warriors for being, you know, they're not this, they're not that. No, they're very good. They are extremely good. And, you know, there are some comments made by Kobe and whatnot. Look here, the Warriors are the best team in the league right now. There is no shame in losing. A lot of people, you know, have said, oh, their ring from last year wasn't real and it was a fluke and blah, blah, blah. No. This team is 17-0 right now. They are very legitimate and they're on a mission. So there's no shame losing to them. You know, hopefully the next game is a little bit closer, but no, they're a very legit team right now and they should be getting their props. I know a lot of people don't get to watch them because they're on the East Coast, but they are very legitimate and, you know, hey, it's a good watch. It's a good watch. So the Laker game versus them, the first half was kind of close, but the better team won, and, you know, we know, you know, what to measure ourselves against now. You know, as Lakers, you know, hey, this is a team you got to get to, or you have good things. It's going to be a while, but that's the measuring stick at the moment.
You're absolutely right, and you know what? Folks have to just understand that, you know, you can give praise, you can give props to another team without, you know, without supporting them. You know, if you're a fan of this game, and I'm speaking generally, if you're a fan of this game, you got to be a fan of what the Golden State Warriors do on both ends of the court, and, you know, in the total package. You know, the Lakers have been there, you know, many times in the past, and I truly do believe they'll get back there. But right now, there's absolutely no shame in giving up props to a team that's just out there like a buzzsaw. And those fans of the Lakers, you know, long term fans of the Lakers know exactly what that's like, being that buzzsaw, being that team with the, you know, target on your back. So, you know, much respect to those guys up north. I can't wait to, you know, until the Lakers are able to, you know, flip the scripts and run through them the way that they used to. But for the time being, much respect. Jordan, let me get your final shot.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about rookies at the beginning of the show, and Jameson brought up the fact that D'Angelo Russell has really improved. You guys talked about that for a second, and he definitely has. You know, and I think if we go back and we assess D'Angelo Russell's play from day one to right now, the efficiency shooting the basketball is an aspect that hasn't really been talked about. I mean, D'Angelo Russell right now is shooting about 41% from the field. Fairly efficient for a guy that has been trying to find a role within the team. And the one thing that I can say about 41% definitely isn't going to win you Rookie of the Year. And, of course, it's got to improve. But for somebody who has struggled to find his role but through the first, you know, 10, 12 games of the season, 15 games of the season, however long it took this guy to actually start settling in and playing good basketball, probably be like 8 games into the year, D'Angelo Russell did a very good job of making sure that he didn't force the issue, okay? We talk about Jahlil Okafor quite a bit on the show today. Jahlil Okafor is a guy that has attempted, I don't even know, I think Jahlil Okafor has attempted like 240 shots this season already to get to where he is at as far as points per game. He's taken double the amount of shots and some of D'Angelo Russell. That's somebody that is probably dealing with frustration in Philadelphia as well. So I think with all the negativity surrounding D'Angelo Russell, I think it's important to know that through it, he didn't press the issue to try to go out of his way to make sure that people noticed him for the right or wrong reasons. He's still stuck within the system. Whatever that system may be, he's still stuck within that system, and we're starting to see him develop a true identity in the NBA. So maybe that first six, seven games of the season wasn't quite fair for D'Angelo Russell, but now if you take a look at his statistics, they're evening out. In the last 10 games, he's been dynamic as far as his efficiency goes, and he's been a very good rebounder as well the last 10 games. So it's something to point out that he definitely took his time, he stayed within his own, and now you're starting to see him create his own identity.
That really is an excellent point. And to that point, you know, we all went into the year, you know, and mentioned it probably going to be a slower start for D'Angelo, you know, to some of those contemporaries that we've discussed earlier in the show. But, you know, of course, you know, as you mentioned, Jordan, you know, once the ball got rolling, I guess we all lost sight of that. Actual respect and kudos should be given to D'Angelo for weathering that storm and, as you mentioned, starting to even those numbers out. And my final shot just kind of piggybacks on what each of you guys said. Look, as long as there's a gradual shift towards giving more and more responsibility to D'Angelo Russell, to Julius Randle, to Jordan Clarkson, you know, as long as we see more and more from guys like Larry Nance Jr. and Tarik Black and even Anthony Brown, once they do decide to, pull him back up, I'm going to be fine with it over the course of the season, I'm speaking, of course. Remember, we went into the year mentioning, they probably weren't going to win a lot of games, but the focus should be on the second half of the year and the process along the way. The record, it is what it is. It's going to be ugly. But if they continue to make that progress, if they continue to shift the focus towards those young guys and grant them more and more responsibility over the course of the season, regardless of what the outcome is, I think it will ultimately be a success. But for each of these fine gentlemen, I know we didn't get to much of the Twitter talk today, but, keep in mind, we'll always try to moving forward. We appreciate you guys, each of you that stick with us each week. We appreciate, all of the patronage of the website, and of course, LakersNation.com. We appreciate the follows on Twitter, and across social media. And we just thank you once again for listening. So for LakersNation.com, for each of these fine gentlemen, Jameson Wells and Jordan Buscarini, I am Jabari Davis, and this has been another week.